Welcome to Backyard Oasis, a podcast designed by and for older adults living in the beautiful Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts and produced in the tech studios at Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Backyard Oasis reaches out to older adults who seek knowledge to help them live more thoughtfully, healthily, and happily, who hope to inspire others with their ideas, and who serve their communities in the interest of the greater good. We hope you join us frequently in our pleasant backyard oasis for wide-ranging conversations with a diversity of people who are growing older and want to talk about it. Hi, this is Dennis Lee, and I'm calling this episode, "So How Do You Do That?" I'll explain. It's kind of a story, and to help us with the story, it's my guest today on Backyard Oasis, Barry Boutillette. With 71 years on the planet, Barry has had three major careers, so we have a lot to explore about his journey. Now, on these podcasts, we try to talk about people that have had interesting lives and have done different things and maybe started one way and ended up with doing something else or transitions. This fits into talking about Barry Boutillette. For 28 years, Barry was a Hampshire County probation officer for the district court. He also served as director of development for the Hampshire County United Way. But in 2017, he received certification through the National Board of Health and Wellness Coaches. His specialty is helping folks focus on the fundamentals of self-care. He guides people to practice a few key principles which can lead to optimum health. His business is named Great Strategies. Barry has written a book called 89 Ways to Be Fully Engaged, written after a ski marathon, 100 miles in 2 days. I'm tired just even reading about it. So Barry Boutillette, as they used to say on TV, this is your life. How are you today? Nice to see you.
I'm great. Great to see you after a long break there too, Dennis. Yeah.
That's great. I've known Barry for a long time. I don't know when I first met him. I think he might have been a probation officer at that time, or maybe with the United Way. So it's great to talk about your career and how you got to where you are today. So Barry, why did you become a probation officer way back at the beginning? What was that about?
Yeah, well, I've always wanted to be in a helping profession of some kind. I think, you know, as a kid, so going to school, going to college, came from a big family, you know, seven kids, and I had a brother with Down syndrome. And
wow.
I think that sort of that nurturing someone in the family who had, you know, some difficulties primed me and many of my siblings to go into the helping profession, you know, one kind or another. So I always wanted to teach. Sure, I early on I wanted to run a multi-service youth program. And then, in fact, I was running an employment program for teenagers when this opportunity for a probation officer's job came up in Hampshire County. And I applied for it and was lucky enough to get it. They're not easy to get. They never were. And so that was, it was trying to help people in a system that admittedly was a bit of a challenge.
Right. Well, you mentioned to me, I was going to bring that up because I remember we were talking one day before we were even talking about podcasts, that you said it was different because people there had to come to you. I mean, they were under stress. They weren't always having the best part of their life. Maybe they weren't the best people on the planet either. I mean, after all, they committed crimes. So that's got to be a challenge because you have to get through to them even when they really don't want to be there.
Yeah, and you know, I was working against a lot of conditions. You know, the environment where these people had come from was a difficult thing to overcome. And so there are a lot of things going against them. A good percentage of them have had substance abuse issues. And when they were clean, when they were sober, they were just like you and me. They were, you know, good people. But we know some substances can really turn people into different, you know, people. And so that was a major challenge for me. But I liked it, and I grew into it like many jobs. You know, you don't pick it up right away. It takes a while. It takes a little experience. You apply a little bit of schooling to a situation, but a lot of it is OJT. You know, it's on the job training. You figure it out as you go. Yeah.
Well, it would seem to me, as an outsider from that whole world, that if you don't have on the job training, you're trying to figure out, how do you know if people are legitimate? In other words, some guy comes in, he's trying to stay out of jail, and so he's, who knows what he's thinking, and then you're trying to get through to him, but you haven't had enough at the beginning. You didn't have enough experience to know who the con artists were. Is that a real cynical way to look at it, or is that true?
No. So there's a fair amount of trial and error involved, like many things in life. You know, I think doctors do a lot of trial and error. Let's try this medication. Yeah. So it's pretty normal, I think, to have to figure things out. And there's no playbook where all scenarios are laid out and where all the answers are there. So you figure it out. And you get burned sometimes, because I dealt with some real good manipulators.
Give me an example of being burned without being too. You don't want I don't want a guy's name.
Yeah,
but I mean, how did you get fooled? I think that, because I find that interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a guy behind a desk. You're trying to keep them on the straight and narrow, and they could lie to you or they could not lie to you. So how do you go through that?
Yeah, I'll give you a great example of getting burned. And it's an interesting irony or coincidence, perhaps. I was assigned a guy coming out of jail with some probation tagged along with it. He had certain conditions to stay clean and sober. He had a history of drug abuse. I had never met the guy before. He comes into my office, and I meet him. And just purely coincidental, he happens to live in the house I grew up in.
No.
So I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to make a nice connection with this kid. This is later in my career. So I should have known better, but I made the mistake. So my office was right by the copy machine. I had to copy some paperwork. It was 4 feet away. I went out to the copier, copied a couple of pages, came back in, set the next appointment with him after we had chatted for a while. He walked out of my office, and within a minute or two, I realized that my cell phone was gone, that I had left on my desk. So obviously, I got burned badly, never got the phone back. He ended up getting prosecuted for a new larceny, going back to jail. But, you know, You take risks in life, and you try to take calculated risks. You don't want people to get hurt. You don't want the public to get hurt. You don't want your personally, you don't want to suffer any consequences. But, you know, you got to take risks. And so that's what I learned, I think, over time, is to sort out the real con men, the manipulators, from the people who genuinely wanted to change and wanted to get better.
Now, did that make you more cynical as a person? In other words, you were a college guy, you end up as a probation officer. Does that make you look at life like, boy, there are a lot of real creeps around and I got to be careful of everybody?
No, not anymore. By then, again, so at this point, I'm, you know, might have been 60 years old. So I had a lot of data points in life from which to draw opinions and conclusions, right, about what life is. So one incident like that didn't, what it did was it made me realize that, valuables are things that you, like a cell phone. I have since cautioned many people who leave their cell phones out. You know, you really ought to keep track of that thing. You know, I see cashiers that have their cell phones out, and I advise them against doing such things. So it just, I'm still, I believe in taking risks. It hasn't made me cynical. Not that I don't have a stitch of cynicism, but by and large, I believe that people are mostly good if you give them an opportunity to do good things.
I was wondering what it was like, and this will come in later when we're talking about coaching. How about when you first started and you didn't succeed with people? In other words, did that depress you? Did you go home and say, gee, I thought I was really good at this, and now this guy's a failure, or I couldn't get through to him? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I saw by the end of my career, I was seeing second generation, in a couple of cases, even third generation, grandchildren of someone that I had dealt with early in my career. Not a good situation. And I learned to put it in context, not take it personally when someone failed. And there are a lot of people, it's like a revolving door for a lot of people. They come in, they offend, they go to jail, they get out, they get rehabilitated, they do well for a while, but you know they resort to old ways and they're back in again. So it didn't take me long to really appreciate that it wasn't me. It was a system. It was a structural thing. It was an environmental thing. In some cases, I'm sorry to say, genetics, that people didn't succeed or fail because of me. It had a lot more to do with many other conditions than who their probation officer was.
Wow. So what was the best part about that job?
A lot of the people I worked with, and occasionally, you know, there were some great success stories of guys who really turned their lives around in a big way. And I would occasionally get letters from people thanking me. I even, crazy enough as it sounds, I got a couple of letters from guys who went to jail who thanked me for sending them to jail because it was a turning point for them.
Wow.
So, you know, when you get a letter of thanks or appreciation or, you know, because of you, things are better now, that was very gratifying.
Well, I think everybody on this planet wants to feel like they made a difference, or at least I feel that way, and I'm sure you do. And our engineer, Alex, I'm sure he does. He's got a new baby. He wants to feel like he's making a difference with his new baby. I mean, that, you know, and he helps people around the college here at GCC getting things done. And we were talking before we started this today how he helps people get the microphone set up and the audio and the visuals. And when he goes home at night, he wants to feel like he made a difference, right? It just wasn't a job. If it's just a job, if it's just getting a paycheck, then to me, that doesn't seem pretty darn good.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, you want to be doing something that you enjoy doing, you're passionate about, you have some skill, you have some competence, you got some ability. And if those things are aligned in the same gig, then you got a good job. And you get, you know, that's the making of a good career and a lot of satisfaction from work.
Right. So you had a sense of when you were succeeding. I mean, did you have that during that period? Did you feel like you were succeeding or you weren't sure? And what happened when you got home and you had a really bad day over time? Was that difficult to keep going given the overall situation?
No. You know, you never know from day to day because in terms of criminality, you know, success depends on staying free and staying out of jail and being law-abiding, it's more of a long-term prospect. So it's not the kind of thing you can easily measure in the short term. But I, by and large, felt pretty satisfied with that work day in, day out. It
Wow.
felt like I, you know, was investing my best effort got enough outcomes that were favorable that made me say, yeah, this is a good job.
Now you decided to move on. And when was that? I don't know if you'd remember dates, but you were there 28 years. So the date isn't important. But what made you leave that?
Yeah. Well, curiously, the probation work over 20 years was done in two separate segments. I did it for 8 years, and I was doing child support collection, which was the most
God bless you
boring job around. You know, chasing guys for you know child support money, and so so I actually left probation after 8 years and went. And work for United Way, who I was a big believer in, and they had opened a new position, and it was right for me, and so it was time for a change.
Tell us about working for the United Way. One of the interesting things about the United Way, and I've been around it a lot And we were just talking before we started today about your old boss, a fellow by the name of John Sheehan, who I said about him, I'm going to tell the story I told you just before we started. I talked to this fellow, John Sheehan, about something else. We used to sing in a chorus together. So he called me yesterday, and your name came up, and I said, hey, I'm interviewing Barry Boutillette tomorrow. And I told John, you're one of the most positive people I ever met. Now, folks listening don't know that, but I'm telling you, the guy, he could turn a pile of nothing and say good things about it. And then he said, well, you mentioned Barry. You mentioned me. Barry is the most positive person I know. So I want to know what you drink for water. I mean, I'm more of a glass half empty, I think. Not terribly so, but compared to you and John, I'm not even close.
Yeah. Well, so John did feel like a very kindred spirit, and I learned a tremendous amount from John, who was, I think, the penultimate salesman, and I use that word nicely, trying to promote caring for others and doing it through, you know, giving, the giving of the United Way. John was, and still is, an incredible guy.
Yep, yep.
The thing that I appreciate most about John was he had this seamless transition. So some of us put on a little mask depending on the situation. We're one way with some people and a different way with. John was the same guy.
Yep.
Whether he was talking to the president of one of the local colleges or talking to a kid on the street.
Yep.
And I always admired that genuine nature of John. Yeah.
Which is a real skill and a real mindset, I think.
Yeah.
Right? It's both,
sure,
I think.
Sure, it is.
Yeah, and it must be different working for a nonprofit. I mean, that changes everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's tough work. It's hard work. And John really had a real big commitment to it, a dedication to it. And he was a true leader for the whole organization.
Right. So then you end up, after being there for 8 years, I think, if I read properly. So you decided to go into coaching. So did you do that while you were working for the United Way, or did you stop that, relax, and then say, gee, I want to do something else, and came to the idea of coaching?
Yeah, I had been taking courses in coaching for a long time. So there was some overlap there. And at a certain point, I got real serious about it, took a terrific program based in Wellesley, Mass., got my health coaching certificate, then ultimately got certified at the national level. And it was just such a natural job for me, probably the best gig I've ever had. It's the job that I love, but it's also a job that I still had to learn about and I'm still challenged by.
Okay, so let's talk about the coaching that you're doing. How does it work? I happened to notice, by the way, I was looking at your website and you had all kinds of testimonials. And I noticed that most of the testimonials were from places other than Hampshire County or Springfield or anywhere. And I thought, well, that's good because he's not looking like he's just promoting in his hometown. That I got why it makes sense to have people from all over. But how do people find out about you?
Yeah, so a couple of ways. So I get a lot of people word of mouth. And the other way that I have worked in the past for national coaching companies who contract with corporations to provide health coaching to their employees. And that's where I ended up working with a lot of people from all over the country.
And so let's talk about the process. Somebody hears about you and says, I have some kind of a problem or I want to make a change. So what mostly do you coach?
A lot of people come to me because they want to lose weight. It's the great American desire. But we invariably end up talking about many things. We end up talking about, you know, getting physically active. We talk about stress. We talk about sleep, anxiety, relationships. It runs the whole gamut because it's all health related. And so we end up, my clients set the goals. It's, you know, they come to me because they want to improve their lives and they want to develop better habits and they want to work on their self-care. And so that's, they set the agenda, and I'm the guide.
Right. I think you used it, that, would you use a word somewhere in your material, you're the co-pilot or something? Did I read that? You consider yourself kind of like the co-pilot of the flight?
I am. So we like, sometimes people think that a coach is the one that's going to give them all the answers and give them the tell them what to do. But in fact, we know that human nature is such that when someone gives us the answer or a prescription, even a, you know, doctor can give somebody a prescription, all the evidence tells us that people are not going to follow through because we have this innate need to be like the captain of our own ship, and nobody's going to tell me what to do.
Right.
And so the beauty of coaching is that I get to help people get at what's underneath, you know, what's the spark, what do you really want to do? And then I don't have the answers, and I'll never know you the way you know you. So let's see if we can come up with some solutions that you create, not solutions that are going to come from me.
Barry's pointing at me. I feel like I'm getting help here. Thank you very much. That's very nice of you. So give us an example of what happens, though. Somebody hears about you. They call up and say, I'm Susie Smith. Do they say, I have a problem? I mean, what's the process like?
Yeah. We usually have a discovery session for both our sakes. That is, they want to check me out. They want to find out who I am, what I do, what my style is. And it's important for me to also get a sense of what they're looking for to make sure that I can help them. You know, if they're looking to uncover some deep-seated problems and solve, you know, what may have happened in their childhood, you know, they want to see a therapist, and I'm not a therapist. But if they want to work today and tomorrow in the time being on their health, then I can really help them. And so it's really, it's a partnership. So it is a co-pilot situation where I'm helping them. But it all starts with that initial so-called discovery session where it's an opportunity for both of us to find out what the other really is all about.
So you give them like one session. Is that like a free session to find out if you're working together or should work together?
Yeah, it's complimentary. Yeah.
Yep. And then I noticed it doesn't seem, your fees don't seem to be, this is not supposed to be a commercial, but I think we should let people know how it works. So if somebody is listening to this today and says, boy, that Barry Boutillette, he seems like a neat guy, I want to lose some weight, what other things do you do? Is it mostly weight and go from there, or do people have other things that they come to you for?
Yeah, the last few years, no surprise, perhaps because of the pandemic, it's stress, it's sleep, it's anxiety, it's things that are not ostensibly losing weight, although that's usually in the mix. You know, I want to lower my A1C because I'm, you know, heading toward type 2 diabetes, or my cholesterol's high.
Yep.
So it's we cover all of those things.
And then how long are the sessions? What's the process?
Yeah, they're 30-minute sessions, which is, I tend to have my sessions shorter than many of my colleagues because I'm a believer that with some good focused conversation, we can get at the heart of the matter and we can start coming up with some things. We don't have to talk for an hour. We can accomplish a lot in 30 minutes.
Now, how do you know, and this goes back a little bit to when you were a probation officer, because obviously not everybody succeeds as a person that's had a problem with crime, and not everybody that comes to you succeeds. So I guess I wrote down on my notes a few weeks ago, I said, how does he know if he's any good? And I guess that's what I'm, how do you know that you're good at what you do?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's based on the feedback, you know, it's based on the testimonials. And I often enough, people tell me that, and this is even in the course of a conversation, they say to me, you know what, as we're talking about it, I'm realizing that this is true. Or, I never thought about it that way. So thanks for giving me that little perspective that, look, this is helping me to get some insight into what I'm doing and what's going on. So that's kind of feedback is happening all the time that is pretty positive.
What have you learned about people before you did this? Now, you probably learned that way back when you were doing the stuff with the court. But what have you learned specifically, or some ideas about people and how they think or why they think? What have you learned along the way?
You know, maybe the most important thing I've learned is about me, not about them, not about my clients. And here's what I've learned. I've learned that I learn way more when I listen than when I talk. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, being glib about that. I think what I've learned to do is listen really well, not have an agenda with people, and be open to where people are in their particular journey of health. And as I've become much more open and become a better listener, I think I'm a more effective coach and co-pilot.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I like some things that I read about you, and your mission in life is to inspire people to be fully engaged in a life that really matters. Now, that's a big deal. I mean, if that's the case, if you say yes to that and you find out you're leaving the planet tomorrow because you're sick, say, well, you know, that's not bad. Like we were talking about before, we did something. We made a difference. I mean, that's really what it's all about, I think.
It really is. And so in the course of coaching, we really talk about what's really important to you. You know, what's your vision? Where do you see yourself at the end of this year? What do you really want to do that's impactful for you and your family and your community? So that's often a part of our conversations.
Yeah. I thought this was really interesting. I looked at one of your testimonials, and a woman said, I'm having a problem, and she's thinking about it, and then she thinks to herself, what would Barry say? I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, and that felt very good to hear that. That was because that's affirming that I must be doing something right, you know, for someone to say that.
I mean, that's really, that you've made a difference. Yeah. At that point, you know, boy, you're in her head, right?
And that feels special. Ultimately, though, of course, we want people to get it. You know, I want to help empower people to come up with their own solutions, because that really is where it's at, because we're all so unique and we got to find our own ways of getting things done and being successful and being healthy.
Yeah. Well, I think you probably have succeeded. Let's talk about, if somebody's listening today and they hear you and they think, he sounds like a neat guy, what can they do? What's the process like if they want to get in touch with you tomorrow?
Yeah, so they always can email me. It's Barry@greatstrategies.net. And my website is greatstrategies, that's plural, greatstrategies.net. So they can check me out, they could email me, and I'd love to have a conversation with them and tell them more and see if, you know, how I can help them out and how we can begin to get started.
Now, your consultations, how long is that? Like if someone called you tomorrow and then you set up a time, would that be like a half-hour deal, a 10-minute thing? What's the
30 minutes. Everything in my book is 30 minutes.
And it's always over the phone?
So I do a lot of video. So I do Google calls. I do WebEx. I do Zoom. Most of my calls are, I'm on my laptop. They're on their laptop or their device of some kind. So they don't have to go anywhere. They can do it from the comfort of their own home or office. And so it's done remotely, but usually with video on a device.
I had an idea as I was driving up today. I thought, suppose somebody listens to Barry and then they say, well, I've got a background in some of this stuff and I'd like to do that. If somebody wanted to be a coach, how do they go about that?
Yeah, I get a lot of calls about that. People are interested in health coaching or coaching in general. And I always recommend the program that I went through because it's really It's the gold standard in health coach training. It's a program based in Wellesley called Well Coaches. So I steer them in that direction and encourage them to check it out. And I can speak from firsthand experience that it's a terrific program.
Terrific. Well, as I was thinking about this day, I knew it was going to be good to see you because you're a neat guy. And you have a newsletter, too, by the way. We should mention that.
I do. A little blog. Yeah.
Yep. All right. All right. Well, I think people should be in touch if they're so inclined. I've known Barry for a long time, and he's a really good guy, and I would trust him to give you good information. And I don't think he's ever worn a white hat, but he is one of the good guys. You know, when we watch Cowboys movies, the good guys always had the white hat. I don't know if you have a white hat. Do you have a white hat?
I don't think I do.
You don't,
no,
but
no.
he is one of the good guys. Barry Boothelet, give me your, or tell us our website, or give me your website again.
Yeah, greatstrategies.net.
Barry Boothelet, always a joy to run into you and not get hurt. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thanks, Dennis.
Barry Boothelet on Backyard Oasis. This concludes today's podcast. We're always looking for new ideas, so feel free to reach out to Judy Raper, Associate Dean of Community Engagement at Greenfield Community College at 413-775-1819 if you have an idea you'd love to share. Special thanks to the creators of Backyard Oasis, Denise Schwartz, Chad Fuller, Dennis Lee, and Christine Copeland. Have a great day.